This is the Quantum Tech Pod, brought to you by Inside Quantum Technology, covering industry analysis, data, and market forecasting for quantum technology markets worldwide. Now, here's your host, Christopher Bishop.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Quantum Tech Pod. I'm delighted you're listening. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on where you're sitting on the planet. My guest today is Carmen Palacios-Barraquero. She's the founder and CEO of New Quantum. Carmen is an award-winning quantum physicist and inventor, the author of several high-impact research papers, as well as a book based on her doctoral research. Prior to founding New Quantum, Carmen carried out her physics education and research at the University of Cambridge and at Imperial College London. She's been a leader of several pro-equality and LGBTQIA+ visibility groups and initiatives with direct action in STEM and beyond. Carmen has been featured in Wired, Forbes, BBC, and Sifted, and she serves on the Technical Advisory Board of the UK's National Quantum Computing Centre. She's a co-founder and director of UK Quantum, the UK's quantum industry group. New Quantum was founded in 2018 and is a spin-out of the University of Cambridge's Cavendish Laboratory. In November 2023, they raised an £8.5 million pre-Series A round from main investors Amadeus Capital Partners, Expeditions Fund, and IQ Capital. New Quantum is building the quantum networking infrastructure essential to scaling quantum computers. Their approach is to interconnect many smaller cores using a quantum networking unit capable of efficiently scaling discrete quantum processing units, QPUs, to form a larger and more useful quantum computer. They're partnering with leading quantum companies, governments, and research groups to accelerate quantum out of the lab and into real-world use. So welcome, Carmen, and thanks for joining me.
Hi, Chris. Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
I'm delighted we can finally connect. I've been wanting to speak to you for a long time, so thrilled to have you here.
Likewise.
I always like to start the podcast by asking my guests to share a bit about their own personal quantum journey. And my objective really is twofold, to give our audience a sense of what you did, more details around, you know, where you were and what you're up to before you founded New Quantum, but also to orient our audience more broadly to the fact that there are many ways and various paths that people have taken to get into the field of quantum information science. So please share with our listeners a bit about your background, your past so far, maybe where you grew up, where you went to school and what you studied, insight into companies or organizations where you worked or conducted research.
Absolutely. Yes. So I'm Spanish. I grew up in Madrid. I went to a British school there and I always loved physics and atomic physics and maths. And when I finished school, I decided that I knew I wanted to study physics, and I decided to come to the UK. So I did my undergrad at Imperial College, spent a year in Paris, then went to Cambridge to do a master's and my PhD. I chose to do it in quantum optics because that's the thing that I really liked, the kind of quantum optics with interaction with matter at the quantum scale. So with matter that behaves almost like atoms, which is these things called quantum dots or quantum emitters. So that was a really, well, very formative years, of course. We did a few significant breakthroughs/discoveries during that time, which led to a few papers and a patent. And after a couple years of postdoc, I decided to investigate what we were going to do with this patent. And then I, at that time, 2018, that was where the quantum industry was starting. So yeah. If we look at when quantum startups were founded, most of them were founded in 2017, 2018. And so there was there was excitement. There was this sense that, you know, things were ready to get out of the lab and to pursue in an industrial setting. And I was sure that quantum photonics was something that was going to be essential in the quantum industry. I didn't know exactly how, but I decided to push forward to found New Quantum with the technology from Cambridge around single photon sources. Well, and since then, it's been a real journey.
Hey, well, no, thank you for sharing that background. So you're setting me up perfectly, because my next question is, you know, what led you to take this innovative tech out of the lab and start a company? So you say you had these patents you thought maybe you could exploit. Oh, terrific idea. Was there an aha moment, maybe a conversation with a colleague or some kind of trigger? I think people are always curious to know how you go from being an academic to starting a company.
It was gradual. I was quite skeptical at first. I went to, well, the tech transfer office in the university encouraged me to learn a bit more about entrepreneurship, and I was, you know, still wanting to be an academic back then and a bit skeptical, but I went nevertheless, and I met all the big Cambridge entrepreneurs, so Herman Hauser and others, and I met who later became my founding advisor, Yuri Anderson, who was an entrepreneur in residence there. I met some investors. I met the Bristol QTech Quantum Entrepreneurship Center people. And so there was interest from mentors.
Yeah.
That they saw the potential. I had very early interest from investors. And so that made things become more and more real for me. And at some point I understood that I liked doing this, that I thought there was a lot of potential, and that I think, you know, something good could come out of it. So I started making steps, but it was gradual, because I did, you know, I did want to stay in academia originally, and I'm very glad I didn't.
Yeah. Well, no, that's great. That's gradual. I mean, to share with people that's, you know, it's not like a light bulb goes off necessarily, but that it's an ongoing sort of iterative process, and who you meet certainly influences those kinds of decisions, right? Who you interact with. And so I described a little bit in my opening remarks, you know, what the company's doing, but I'd love to have you share, you know, New Quantum's vision. Like, how might your approach, this innovative approach, enable scalable quantum computing?
Absolutely. So what we're building is the entanglement fabric, or networking infrastructure, that will be required to build very large scale quantum computers. I.e. fault-tolerant quantum computers. And this really, I mean, it's tackling the scaling challenge in a different way, and in the way that we think is really the only way to achieve real scalability, which is to network together smaller quantum processing units via photonic links. And what these photonic links do is that they create entanglement between the quantum processing units, the QPUs. And if we go back to basics, entanglement is the main resource for quantum computing. It's what quantum computing relies on. So when we talk about qubits and the numbers of qubits inside a QPU, we really mean entangled qubits. And so if you're able to create entanglement not only inside the QPUs, which, you know, is already there natively in the qubit platform, but if you manage to create entanglement between QPUs, you suddenly unlock massive potential, because you suddenly have modularity, which is really, you know, has really kind of profound consequences. But you continue to have a quantum speed up. Right, if you were to interconnect quantum, QPUs in a classical way, you wouldn't have a quantum speedup. You would just still be limited by the computational power of one QPU, essentially. But if you create entanglement between them, you suddenly have access to truly modular, limitless scaling. There's a few ways of doing this. So some people have proposed fixed ways of coupling QPUs, like literal coupling between microwave links, for example, or shuffling ions. The way that we're proposing to do it is via photons. So it's called photon-mediated entanglement. And it's a way, photon-mediated entanglement allows you to then create entanglement between any two QPUs inside a data center, for example. So it has a huge amount of flexibility if you use photonics and switching. And that's what we're proposing. We think the consequences of being able to do this will be significant in the ways that we architect large-scale computers in the way that we design the error correction, for example, and that has repercussions, later down up in the stack.
That's a very exciting approach, very innovative approach. Fantastic. I want to ask you about the recent relationship with Cisco. So New Quantum, certainly you're pushing the boundaries regarding getting this quantum out of the lab and into the real world. I know you recently announced a collaboration with Cisco. Congratulations, by the way. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
Tell me about that partnership and the progress you've made on that front and with others.
Yes. So if I can just backtrack a little bit in terms of our company roadmap. So there's two axes that we're pursuing in the company as a roadmap. One, and this is really essential, is pushing the boundaries of performance of quantum networking, because otherwise we won't achieve large quantum networks. Quantum networking is still in its infancy. The largest quantum network today is a three-node network in Delft. And so we just need to increase the performance. And that's an R&D roadmap. And I can talk a little bit more about what our core technology is. It's to do with interfacing qubits and photons. It's to do with high-speed switching, high-performance control, etc. So that's the pushing the boundaries of R&D. The almost like orthogonal part of the roadmap is to productize and mature some of these systems. And so we've actually got collaborations on Cisco on both. The lesser known and older collaboration that we've been working with Cisco for a while is on in quantum integrated photonic circuits to achieve high speed, low loss switching and detection. And that's kind of pushing the state of the art, pushing performance. And then the recent announcement, which we're so excited about, is on the kind of productizing, getting things unshackling from the optical table and into a rack. It's all about getting the what we call the quantum networking unit into a deployable prototype. The quantum networking unit is what you can imagine in the future. You'll have a quantum data center, and you'll have QPUs interleaved with QNUs doing the networking. Right, so that is our flagship product, and the project with Cisco is to create what we think will be the world's first quantum networking unit in a 19-inch rack, and the challenges there are to maintain the performance that you can achieve on the optical table, but in a deployable setting, and that requires a lot of different kinds of temperature, vibration, stability, etc., and some advanced control features that can carry out that kind of orchestration function.
Now, I look forward to following your progress on that partnership. Very, very cool.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the theoretical blueprint project. So, in terms of where we go from here, what are New Quantum's plans? Maybe more broadly, can you share with our listeners what's next?
Yes, of course. So many things, many exciting announcements will come out this year. But I wanted to highlight one, a recent one that we're very excited about, and that is a little bit different from what we have announced to date. Because we've started out as a hardware company, as a quantum photonics company, but we are. We have launched a theory project, and we're growing that function a lot. And this is a very exciting one with a company called SoftwareQ. They're based in Canada. They're founded by Michele Mosca, and they're experts on compilers, error correction, benchmarking. And what we're doing together is to understand. So people have looked at what are the kind of thresholds and benchmarks and quantum error correction codes and compilers that you need for monolithic fault tolerant computers.
Right.
Now, we, and I think most of the industry also agrees with this, think that fault tolerance, the kind of large scale fault tolerance that we're all excited about won't happen in a monolithic device. Hmm. it will have to be a modular network device. So now suddenly you have a lot new parameters, new thresholds, new ways of benchmarking the performance of this large scale machine.
Yeah.
And the most exciting thing, I think, is that this networked architecture actually gives you a new tool, which is custom connectivity. So remember I said with the network, we can create entanglement between any two QPUs, or we will be able to do that.
Yeah, that's great. Wow.
So what that means is that you might be able to use this long range, more complex entanglement fabric, as we call it, to use more efficient quantum error correction codes.
Huh.
So you might have heard of quantum LDPC codes, but there are other codes that are non-planar. That are much more efficient than, say, the surface code, and that might have ratios, physical to logical qubit ratios that are, you know, much more desirable, like 100 or 10 to 1 even, but that require this long-range, flexible connectivity, and that is exactly what the network can enable. So we're looking at all of these things with Software Q and really, you know, asking the question, what is the architecture of a large-scale fault-tolerant quantum computing from a theoretical perspective, and how do we blueprint it?
Yeah, but well, fascinating. Like, how do you, with a new technology, how do you measure and benchmark it? How do you rate it and rank it? How do you then, gauge it and improve it? That's a very interesting problem. To be honest, I hadn't really thought about before in terms of, with a new technology, how do you put a benchmark against what it's doing, how it's working, how it's functioning, right? So that's part of the challenge. Well, exciting. Congratulations on that news. I know Michaela, he's a well-regarded thought leader in the space, so very exciting. Let's talk about talent. So you've assembled quite an impressive team at New Quantum. Given the fact that there's fierce competition for quantum talent really all over the world, please tell me more about who's on your team and how you came to put this amazing group together.
Yeah, for sure. So I think the New Quantum team is truly exceptional, and I'm very, very honored to be working with all of them. I think, well, I'll start with who's there. So in terms of our management team, our technology lead is Claire Legal, and she's one of the people that I've ever met that understands quantum and quantum networking in a deeper and broader way that I've met. I've known her for over 8 or 9 years. She used to be a PI, a group leader at the Cavendish, and also worked at Microsoft Research for some time. And I finally convinced her to join New Quantum, and it's just been, I mean, she's a real superstar, and she was the author. She built what is still today the world record fastest network ever demonstrated, quantum network.
Wow.
Then she's our VP of technology, our VP of product, Ed Wood. He leads all of our commercial side of the business and our positioning in the industry, our marketing, our partnerships. He's a real product veteran expert. He was the product manager behind, you might know this, is the hardware security module first marketed by nCipher. So this is the box that stores all of our cryptographic keys and was one of the most successful products in the cybersecurity industry, in decades.
Wow.
And has been involved in many other products like that in the Cambridge ecosystem. Our VP of Ops, IP, and Legal is Samantha Funnel, and she's a patent attorney and was the chief IP counsel at Arm for about 12 years before moving to DeepMind and other AI companies, and then returning back to hard tech, as she puts it.
Yeah.
And so she's, one of the world's experts on IP, and of course IP is something that's very important for us.
Yeah.
we have an amazing HR and finance team as well. And I mean, we're about 46 people at the moment. And just, I mean, truly exceptional, as I said. I think the reason I think we've been able to grow and attract such great talent is, I think, a number of reasons. What we're doing is quite unique. So we are really kind of, you know, we're proposing a new a new part of the industry, a new part of the quantum stack.
Paradigm.
We're creating a new layer in the stack, and I think people find that really exciting. I think when people come to interview or look at the website, they can see that we're a diverse company, and we are. We're almost 50% women. We've got like I don't know, 20 nationalities, and you know, we've got all sorts of identity representations across all parts of the business, you know, horizontally and vertically. And I think that really is a true, you know, something that people are attracted to. And I think, well, being, I think our location, Cambridge, is helpful as well, because there's a huge talent pool in Cambridge already, with a lot of the tech ecosystem and the university. But also it's a really nice city to live in. And it's somewhere where people, you know, do consider moving.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Carmen, I know you know, you travel a lot, you speak at various events. I want to get your take on sort of UK versus US. So there are certainly robust and active quantum scenes in both places. What do you see, and maybe what are the major differences as well as potential synergies?
It's
I know the UK has a lot of funding, certainly from the UK, a lot of visibility around the government spend and support, which is very exciting.
It's super exciting. So, I mean, in the UK, we have, you know, historically, you know, great quantum science in universities. But I think the real kind of advantage has been actually coming from government. The strategy and the intent that has come from government from 10 years ago and continues, because that has meant that we have effectively, from really good science, created really good, really credible companies. And indeed, you know, we have in the UK, we have companies at every layer of the stack almost, and representing each kind of qubit. And all of the, and these companies are credible, right? They're good companies. They, you know, and they're well respected around the world. And
that's absolutely, yes.
Yeah. So it's pretty unique. And that's one thing. And what has happened now with the new quantum strategy that was announced about a year ago by UK government, which is the 2.5 billion, is that it's money. It signals long-term intent from the government, but also it's been done, and it's still being done, in close collaboration and consultation with industry. So I'm a director and in the executive, in the steering committee of UK Quantum, which is the equivalent of QEDC in the US. And, you know, we've been working super closely with government for years to come up with the strategy. And I think that the fact that we have a joint roadmap that unifies people towards a common goal and unifies these different companies that occupy different parts of the stack to achieve something greater is the real advantage in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, the fact they built a national quantum computing center is remarkable. I mean, it just speaks volumes about...
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. So the NQCC is one of those kind of flagship initiatives of the UK's quantum strategy. I think they've been doing a fantastic job. And they recently announced, I'm sure you know, the outcome of the testbed score, which means that in 18 months, the NQCC is going to have about 5 or 6 quantum computer prototypes of different qubit types. That's unique, right? Like, there's nothing like that anywhere else.
No, that's great. Very exciting.
Yeah. So, I mean, and in terms of the US, it's very different. It's a really different landscape. I'm sitting here in DC at the moment. And it's a very different landscape, and I think it has different strengths. I think the strength is the sheer power of big industry, right? I mean, IBM, Google, all of these companies that are investing in quantum, they have talent, they have money, they have the ability to draft their own long-term roadmaps. And ultimately, you know, how quantum computing gets consumed, you know, I suspect will be highly, you know, affected by what these large companies, how they move and how they kind of take quantum computing to the public. So they, you know, they hold a, I think they still hold a lot of power in the quantum computing industry. So that's the strength of the US, plus the kind of the amount of funding for startups as well, and for, you know, the kind of the scale of the rounds that can be achieved here. On the kind of downside, I think the strategy piece from government is not as strong as in the UK. And so, you know, when it comes to really large initiatives like building the first full-time quantum computer or like a large-scale network, I guess jury's out which strategy, works best. I think it will be a blend at the end. And fortunately, between the UK and the US, there's very good relationships and at a high level from government, there's an agreement to collaborate on quantum, which is rare. So the US won't really collaborate on quantum with many other countries, actually.
Well, thank you for sharing that perspective. Carmen, I like to, we're coming to the end. I like to end the podcast by asking my guests to share their vision of where, you know, quantum-based solutions might be in, say, 5 to 10 years. And more broadly, you know, what kind of impact do you think it's going to have on how we live and work? You know, chance to wax philosophic, look into your crystal ball. What does Carmen think how this will change what we're doing today?
So our vision, our dream, what we're pushing for is that we create this entanglement fabric that allows us to build fault-tolerant quantum computers earlier and in a more effective way and in a more flexible way. You know, we've been used to machines that have to be very, you know, where the algorithm and the compiler and the physical system are all very tailored to each other. Whereas what we're trying to change is, you know, as you said, is this paradigm shift where actually, if you're able to kind of abstract a little bit how the entanglement is created and you create this entanglement fabric that is our, you know, ultimately that is what we're selling, then you might be able to also abstract things around the compiler and the algorithm and have these large machines that can solve multiple different big problems. So that's our goal.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you for joining me, Carmen. I'm delighted that we finally got to have this conversation and sharing the innovative work that you're leading at New Quantum. I think it's very exciting. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you very much. Me too, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I'm going to invite people to follow you and the company on LinkedIn. I'm also going to invite them to follow the people that you mentioned on your leadership team, because I think it's always good to be connected with and aware of thought leaders in the space. I'm going to point people to your website. It's www.new-quantum.com. The company has an account on X, formerly Twitter, at New Quantum LTD. And thank you again.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Carmen, for joining me today. Thanks to all of you for listening. Please share this podcast on your social media channels to increase the impact of my conversation with Carmen. Listen to my other podcast episodes if you haven't already, and please feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. This has been a production of Inside Quantum Technology.
You've been listening to the Quantum Tech Pod, brought to you by Inside Quantum Technology. For more information on this episode or other topics relating to quantum technology, visit insidequantumtechnology.com.